Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K 12 Education Talk Radio on the 24th of February, 2022. Welcome to our show today. It's going to be with my good friends from Fielding International, and we're going to be talking about designing schools for staff and student wellness. As you know, we're very interested in here in social-emotional learning. Staff and student wellness fits in under that. And I'm very excited to have my friends Ellen Duff and Mike Postumus from Fielding International here. We've also got Kim Rowland. And Kim's out of Grand Rapids. And she is we're going to get her to define this even stronger than I'm going to do it. She's a learning experience coordinator at Grand Rapids, Michigan Public Museum School. And I want to find out all that is and how she works with Fielding and how Fielding is designing schools with SEL, staff, and student wellness in mind. And that's a key thing, okay, these days. And it's going to make a huge difference as we move forward post-pandemic, et cetera, which I always like to use the words post-pandemic. I hope we are, for goodness sakes. All right, we're going to archive today's show over at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org. That's the home website for Equity and Access, our online journal, our Consortium for Equity and Education. All of our podcasts are there. And there's also a link to SEL Today. .org, which is our social-emotional learning website. So let me bring my three guests on. I should have done this a minute ago. Hold on. There we go. It's all circling. Let's start with the ladies. Mike, hold tight there for a minute. Ellen, welcome to the show. Are you in North Carolina?
I am from North Carolina. Hi, Larry. I am currently right outside of Detroit.
You'd be better off in North Carolina in the winter. What are you doing in Detroit, for goodness sakes? I saw the North Carolina area code. I thought it was cool.
I moved to Michigan about 10 years ago, and I work at Fielding International in the Ferndale office. So
there you
go. We work with schools internationally, but in the Michigan studio.
Cool enough. Good enough. Thank you. It's great to have you here. Okay, back here again. Now, I got to tell you, Kim, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hi, call me Larry. It's a pleasure to know you, Kim.
It's good to get to know you too, Larry.
Thank you. What do you do for a living? I really mean that. You got the best title in the world, Learning Experience Coordinator at Grand Rapids Public Museum School. I love this. Talk to me. Talk to everybody. What do you do? It's great.
It's a pretty awesome job. So yeah, I get to work with teachers and students and design learning experiences that integrate place-based education, design thinking, and the museum artifacts. So I do a lot of field trip planning. I do a lot of project planning with teachers. It's a pretty awesome gig.
And you work for the public museum, am I correct? The Grand Rapids Public Museum, am I correct?
I work for Grand Rapids Public Schools.
It's a theme school
that is in the Grand Rapids Public Museum. So we're on the fourth floor.
Wow.
So there are museum guests under us.
Wow.
And we get our kids down in the museum as often as possible.
This is very cool. And I'm just going to ask this before we get into the details of the show. What is the essence of the Grand Rapids Public Museum? Is it a history of Grand Rapids? Is it a natural history museum? Is it everything I can think of? What's the public museum about?
It is all of those things. So
cool.
The museum has artifacts donated from community members. So, for example, a group of students this morning are working on an exhibit about sports, local sports. So they got to see and touch a curling stone used
great
at a club here in Grand Rapids. So
that is super. And by the way, Grand Rapids is the home of, in my opinion, our least appreciated president, Gerry Ford. Okay, he was the right guy, in my opinion, at the right time. I always say that. Everybody always says, what? But I stand by my history. Okay, he is an underappreciated guy. okay? And he was the right guy at the right time, and I don't care what anybody says. And I will go to bat for him. Is that okay, Kim?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. I will. Grand Rapids, everybody, and a true war hero, I might add. Okay, Mike, are you there? I'm just going to stop ranting about Grand Rapids. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how's it going? I'm here and excited to be on the show. Thanks for having us, Barry.
Good. And where are you today? Where are you? Are you in Ferndale?
Today I'm just outside of Bozeman, Montana, but I also have worked very closely with that Detroit studio with Fielding International and have worked closely with Grand Rapids Public Museum and Public Museum School. So happy to be representing the roots of Michigan as well.
You are. And what are you doing in Bozeman? That's cool.
Oh, I actually live out here, but I'm one of the education design principals with Fielding International. So I get the privilege of working all over the United States and all over the world.
Wow.
And yeah, so I just happen to go back to the mountains when I'm ready to take a nap.
How absolutely beautiful. And like my, also at Fielding, my good friend Jill Akers is outside of Colorado Springs or Pueblo, well, somewhere in southern Colorado. It's great. And so you're in Bozeman. I think that's just wonderful. Okay?
That's
terrific. Ellen, tell us, okay, all about Fielding International. Okay, just define the company for us.
Absolutely. So we are a school design company that works with architects and educators to really redefine what learning can be in schools. So we go in and meet with teachers, students, staff, and find out some of the barriers they have in their schools and try to take those barriers away to create new opportunities for learning. So I'm an architect, but I work closely with educators like Mike to go make sure we see the whole angle of what's going on in new schools.
Yeah, you sure do. And Ellen, I asked her to describe her job. She wrote this, okay? Educational spaces are more than just an architectural design. To Ellen Duff, they present an opportunity to stimulate intellectual, social, and emotional growth for the next generation of learners. And in all the work I do with Fielding International, okay, I can say that's a pretty good definition, okay, of what you guys do. There. Okay, and then I want to ask, okay, Mike, you brought this up. I'm going to swing back to you. Mike, Kim is here. All right, and talk to me why Kim is here. Why did you guys invite Kim here? And I love the fact that she's here. And we're going to get into details.
Yeah.
Put Kim in the picture. Go ahead.
I will put Kim in the picture. So Kim is she's a very humble educator, but she is a leader of the Grand Rapids Public Museum School. And the Public Museum School is unique nationally. It won national recognition for its approach to teaching and learning and the way that they're rethinking how to really engage kids in authentic learning experiences that position the student at the center of the experience. And so Kim is really on the front lines of thinking very carefully about the social-emotional needs of these students, really addressing the whole child in the school, and giving kids agency, which is a big part of that social-emotional learning experience. So Kim is doing the hard work, sharing with the rest of the world how the Public Museum School is achieving this and really helping inspire many other schools to take similar paths. So she's a brilliant educator and has incredible practical experience in this domain.
What a nice group of compliments.
Thanks, Mike.
And that was terrific. That was a great explanation. Kim, let me ask the opposite question. Okay, and I'm going to ask basically the same question of you. We're talking to Fielding, my good friends, my dear friends, Fielding International, INTL.com, FieldingINTL.com, on designing for staff and student wellness. You run the education side, if I may, of the Public Museum School in Grand Rapids. Well, how do you work with? If you can define that a little better if you want. How do you work with Mike and Ellen? How's that all come together from your point of view?
Yeah, so I haven't had the privilege of having a space designed by Mike and Alan, but we, all
That's
three
okay.
of us, know that students, learning is situational, right? So any space that students are in is either going to contribute or maybe take away from their learning experiences. And so working with Mike and Ellen has helped us to see some ways that we can sort of utilize the space that we have in ways that are most beneficial for students learning. So really simple things like natural light, bringing in natural elements into our classroom. We know that helps students learn better, make connections with other people on a deeper level. And so I guess my work with Mike and Ellen really has helped me bring some things back to our school and say,
mm-hmm.
we got to try some of these things out and see what happens to our kids' moods, to their attitudes, hmm. how they relate to each other, and how they relate to the curriculum that we're exposing them to.
And boy, if Mike, I could add one thing to what
I was just going
to
say, and Mike, you were right. She is good, but you go ahead. She is good.
Yeah,
she got it.
Yeah, she's excellent.
She is.
And so we paired with the museum school and specifically Kim because we kind of had the opportunity to present to the state of Michigan superintendents a report on what's happening in social emotional learning in schools. So we always are trying to challenge and grow ourselves. So pairing with Kim, sitting down, thinking through what is working, what's not working, what are the best practices that people are talking about, but also what are the things, the real life stuff that's happening in the classroom. So our relationship with Kim is very much about understanding from a practitioner's perspective to make sure that we are grounded in the realities of what educators and students are facing every day, not just the theory of what researchers are suggesting. So we collaborate with people like Kim
great.
Very consistently to make sure that we're doing a great job.
Wow. All of you, great explanation of the relationship. Okay, I got to tell you, okay, and I have to ask then, okay, and because Kim mentioned place-based education design thinking in my little write-up here. All right. So all of that said, okay, Ellen, let me ask you this. COVID, okay, hopefully we're coming out of that. I hope so. Everybody be careful, but hopefully we're coming out of that, okay? So we had pre-COVID. That was the last 55,000 million years. Then we had 2 years with COVID, and now humanity starts again, okay? What do you see as the new things we've learned with the impact of COVID, Ellen, as you design schools and so with social emotional wellness in mind, and COVID has brought out the real need for solid social emotional learning, social emotional caring. All right. So, what do you see in there as you design stuff, Ellen?
Absolutely. So, with the pandemic and just students' general wellness, we're seeing a lot of students coming back to school and really needing to be grounded in their relationships and their sense of belonging
yeah.
to the school.
Yeah.
So we're seeing places that teachers are making that are student-safe spaces within the classroom, outside of the classroom, but also spaces for teachers. We always think about schools as space for learners, and they're so important to have, but also making spaces for wellness for teachers is so important as well.
Continue on that. Just talk about that for a second. Can you
yeah,
add
so,
to that, please? I love that. Do it. That's a big theme of ours here is the social emotional needs of educators, which then,
mm-hmm.
if I may, flow down to the to a healthy educator means good healthy students is the best way I can say that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And helps with teacher retention and just overall helping their dynamics of
Absolutely.
Learning. We're working with a few schools that are creating these spaces called teacher workshops or educator workshops
oh.
where they can come in and have their own sense of space, whether it's putting their personal belongings, having flexible furniture for collaboration, but also places for recharge. They might need a space to take a phone call or to have a hard conversation with another teacher. And often
yep.
those spaces aren't in schools right now. So really going in and talking with teachers about some specific activities that they want to be doing with each other but don't have access to from a space standpoint, we're really finding that to be more and more important as we go forward with design.
You know, that's really interesting. I never actually thought of that before, but I was a teacher for years, then I went into business. And it's true. In business, when you need to talk to somebody, you have an office, you have a break room, if I may, you have a conference room, okay? But schools aren't necessarily built with that in mind. They're not built, and maybe I'm wrong here, you guys, Mike, help me out here. They're not built, per se, or have not been built for the collaboration of educators. All right? And that's a breakdown of silos, which we really need. Mike, am I on the right track here?
Yeah, 100%. We often refer to it as the cells and bells model. So you have all of these repeated pattern of individual boxes and then a hallway running down the middle. And the reality is, as we think about how teaching and learning and instruction is changing, all of the things that Kim's doing at the museum school and many of the schools that are working with us at Fielding, they're saying, you know what, like, we need our students to be learning and interfacing and interacting with more people. We need to expose them to new environments. We need to give them a chance to have choices in the things that they're doing. And we also want to make sure that we're using the brilliant minds of all of the staff members to tackle the really complex problems.
Exactly.
How do you address the individual needs of all 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 80 kids that are learning in this zone? So if we can bring educators and create the conditions for not just the educators, but also the students to collaborate alongside with the educators on what is the best environment, what are the right conditions, how are we going to tackle this problem as a team, we're going to be able to solve more of the really challenging problems that we have in schools. And one of those is making sure that all kids are learning.
That's why we do equity and access. We just think it's so darn important that all kids get it. Kim, put that in perspective in light of what you do. And if I understand correctly, maybe you can give us a little verbal picture. Your museum school is the top floor or under the upper floors of the actual museum. And how was that set up? And then how do you incorporate the SEL in all the stuff that you do, okay, regarding the kids in the museum? Museum education I love, and I love what you're doing here. I'm going to get into the details, Kim. Talk about all this.
Yeah, so we're on the fourth floor. We have six sort of designated classrooms. We have a large atrium space in the middle of those classrooms, and those are multi-purpose spaces. So sometimes it's the atrium, sometimes art happens there, sometimes it's the atrium where kids
eat.
It's where a lot of our projects happen when students kind of bump out of their classroom spaces. Our sixth grade classroom has a wall, a movable wall between the two spaces so that can be one big collaboration space for both classes. I laugh a little bit because I'm currently taking this call in the health room because it was the only room that I thought I would be able to do this without an interruption. But space is so important, right? If our classrooms look, and stay a certain way, if all of their desks are in rows, that tells the student about how they're going to be learning and how they're not going to be learning. So we like to shake things up. We have a lot of tables in our spaces. They're not round, which I wish they were, because that facilitates relationships. But spaces that can look different on Monday than they do on Tuesday, depending on what students are doing and the learning that students are doing. How that ties to social emotional, this is huge, right? It was huge before. But now it's just bubbled to the surface, right? And we can't ignore it. It's not like Susie down the hall, while she's a really warm, fuzzy teacher and her classroom looks different and she's doing these social emotional things, everybody has to be doing these things right now. So starting with morning meetings, meeting kids where they're at, trying to figure out how a kid is coming, almost like a barometer when students are walking in the door. Mike alluded to this, but giving students choice about how they engage in their learning, I think, is so important right
it
now.
Is.
We
it
don't.
Is.
I've
got to ask you one question: are kids at the public museum school all the time, or do they also have a regular school they go to, or is the public museum school their school?
It is their school. It is their school. So they walk up four floors through the museum to get to the fourth floor. And then, like I said, we try and get them out into the community as much as possible, down into the museum. Our museum staff comes to us like I was talking about earlier today with the students with the curling stone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is their school. It's not a rotating, so we have the same kids the whole school year. So it's if I could go back to middle school, I would definitely want to be here at the at this school.
Actually, that, your wish came true. You're in middle school every day.
Yeah, have been for 15 years.
Who came up with the idea of putting a school in the museum? I have to ask, this is fascinating to me. Who came up with the idea of putting a school in the museum? Where'd that start?
Yeah, so Mike probably has the best story about that.
Mike?
Yeah, so...
I've got to learn more about this. This is great.
Yeah, as the lore goes, or as the legend goes... the president of the Grand Rapids Public Museum, Dale Robertson, is a brilliant educator. He's a brilliant guy, and he was in a running club with the at the time the Grand Rapids Public Schools Board of Education president, and they would do long runs in the morning, and so that, you know, you get into a long run, you're having conversation. They're both great long distance runners, and one day one of them said, "Wouldn't it be cool to have a school in the museum?" And that was it. So. They quickly put together a team of educators. I had the privilege and opportunity to be on that team and begin to envision and create what are the unique conditions and affordances of that type of environment. How would that space begin to create the opportunities that we need to help students practice, or the opportunities that students need, the skills that they need to practice, and then what would we do to craft a curriculum around that experience? And then Kim has been at the front lines of actually taking all of those dreams and making it a real school, which is why she's such an important person in this process. I should also add, Kim, that program in the museum is a 6th through 8th grade middle school, but the Grand Rapids Public Museum School also has a 9th through 12th grade high school that now inhabits the old Grand Rapids Public Museum building that was decommissioned, and they redesigned it and re-inhabited it as a high school, and that's connected to the museum's archives. And so Kim also works in that space consistently. She shares her time between the middle and high school. And in that environment, all the things that we're talking about flexible learning spaces, they have the opportunity to kind of reimagine that space physically, and that the environment in that school is certainly supportive of all of these themes as well.
Are they magnet schools? Can kids come from all over Grand Rapids, or are they neighborhood schools?
It's a theme school.
Okay,
so,
go ahead. Go. Do it. Yep.
Any student can apply. It's not a test-in. So we probably have the best representation of Grand Rapids within our school as far as demographics. So, yeah,
this is so cool.
Anyone can come here.
And do you know of any other cities that have done this? Kim?
I know that there are other museum schools, but I think that they're similar to the system that you were alluding to earlier, where students kind of rotate in and out of that program. But not that I know of. I think we're the only museum school where students are resident in the school for the entire school year.
Cool. So all right. So now
it's a great idea.
It's a great idea. It's just an amazing idea. I love this. So, Mike, I got to ask you, and I'll get back to you in a minute, but I got to ask Mike because he brought this up. So, Mike, and maybe Ellen was too, but Mike, you said you were involved in the original design of putting a school into the building. Okay, so now you're going into a museum. This is very cool. You're a designer. You're trying to make a school from a museum. Talk to me when you look at it from a design point of view, and especially from Fielding International's kind of view.
Yeah, like, so my work with Fielding International, I have the privilege of being a trained educator that gets to work with designers like Ellen, and as we begin to translate between instruction and physical space. And so one of the challenges of the museum school and any other school is to think about, A, how do we take a relatively confined space. We still want the museum to operate as a museum. We can't take over all the program. How do we create the ideal conditions using all of the constraints that we have? And so that's one of the unique things, but also thinking about what is the physical environment that we have in addition to the school, into the physical classrooms and that we can utilize to improve instruction. And so the reason I bring this up, this is very important. The museum school has an additional physical environment that is unique. It's some people would say a real world learning environment, where you have the physical exhibitions, the museum content, the environment of working with the public. And so really building in that environment into the teaching and learning experience hits a lot of very important literal social and emotional learning needs, where the museum school kids are tasked with going and creating exhibitions, tasked with presenting to the public, tasked with curating stories and narratives that the public comes and experience. Those kids are asked to be museum docents from time to time. And so thinking very intently about the physical space being the third teacher, right? I like to use the third teacher. I don't know why it's the third teacher. Maybe it's the extra educator. But what we're noticing post-COVID, and this is super fascinating, and it's not fast, maybe it's predictable. Post-COVID, I get to go in and talk to educators and students all over the world. After COVID, all of my meetings with these people, the demand for outdoor learning, the demand for creating intentional learning environments outside of the traditional confines of the building has now skyrocketed. Every school I've talked to has said, we need better outdoor learning spaces, because it's been normalized and educators found out, you know what, this isn't a terrible idea. My kids love it. It helps them reframe their vision, what they see. It helps them reframe their space. And it can be a great active management strategy for some of those emotional needs that students have who are getting pent up and feeling like they're being constrained. So there's some really interesting connections between the museum school using its environment and how we're helping other schools think about the environment and the context that they're in to expand what the physical classroom is.
And, Mike, you were an educator. You're not an architect. Am I correct?
Correct. Yep. I am an educator by training, classroom and administration. Yep.
God bless Randy Fielding and what he has put together, him and that team at Fielding International, of just great educators mixed with great architects and school designers. I think it's just amazing. Ellen, I got to ask you this. A school comes to you guys, and you ladies, it's a terrible way to put it, okay, to you folks, all right, and says, that's a little better, okay, and says, we want to create better, now that COVID's done, we want to incorporate we're outdoors, okay, give the kids a sense of more space, et cetera. They're coming back, they need socialization, they need SEL. When you hear that, and you're an architect, right?
Yes, I'm an architect.
Yeah, okay, so you're the that true design side, okay? All right. When you hear that as an architect in a school design world, what comes to your mind? Well, I'm just going to plant more trees outside, okay? What does that mean? I'm serious. People are listening to this, but they don't know what goes through. My audience doesn't know what goes through an architect's mind. You hear
that
from Mike question. And you hear it from Kim. What goes through your mind, Ellen?
Right. So how do you integrate more nature into school and out of school? It's so funny. We go into a lot of these schools, and even though I'm an architect, we tell them the building's not that important sometimes. It's getting kids out in nature and exposing them to new ideas. And some ways you can have specific outdoor environments absolutely catered to learning, whether it's having more of like a park-based playground. It's not just a specific type of play structures, but maybe it's incorporating rock walls or berms or slides that are in pairs so students can start to integrate learning together. But a lot of times we find that people want to integrate nature inside. A lot of schools are confined by their sites. So we actually met with some students the other day. They said, we want a nature room, even if it's fake nature. Let me have some fake trees, some fake grass. I'll be happy. So students are wanting this too.
They are. And let me ask you, so can this work? And I'll stay with me here. Grand Rapids is a pretty good-sized city, all right? Can this work in an inner-city school, okay, a city school? Okay, as opposed to a suburban school. Okay, and social emotional needs are so necessary in an urban environment. Okay, talk to me about it, you know, just that part. Can we make it work? And I'll use my example. I went to school in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Okay, William Penn. I'm so old that William Penn was in my class. All right? Benjamin Franklin. We and I were fourth graders together. Okay? And he looked terrible in those knickers. He just looked terrible, I got to tell you. He should have worn long pants. Okay? But I got to tell you, okay, when you go into an area like Philly, where I grew up, okay, and there's all these urban schools, can we bring this and get these kids socially, emotionally correct through the building of the school, the design of the school? How can we do that, Ellen?
Yeah, that's a great
question. Post-COVID nutsiness, I might add. Go ahead.
Right. So a lot of times with finding nature and bringing students to nature, it's not about necessarily always having greenery. It's having these elements of relaxation, right? So you can bring in these elements where students can feel safe in their own classrooms, whether it's finding a corner to throw a beanbag or taking some doors off some storage and creating a little nook. We've seen all the different hacks of different ways that teachers can start creating these spaces within rooms for student agency and student safety. We know that it's not just safety from the sense of a lot of the crazy things that have been going on in the United States, but it's also wellness safety, right? So making sure that spaces can be dedicated for proactive regulation areas inside and outside of the classroom. It's not only going outside, it's having those spaces inside as well.
And you said it a minute ago, just a beanbag chair and a little bit of light and that kind of, and it just makes all the difference in the world. It goes a long way. Kim, I got to ask you this, and I know you work in a great place. I've never been there, but if you had your druthers, okay, and now that the school's – how long has the school been in operation, Kim? When was it all designed?
This is our seventh year. So sixth graders that started with us in 2015 are graduating this year.
Wow. Well, congratulations to them and to the teachers who made that possible. That's cool. Okay. By the way, do they go on to the museum high school if they're in the junior, if they're in your middle school? Is that automatic?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Students once they start with us in sixth grade, we hope they graduate with us.
They go to the other school, your other museum school. I love that. I think that's great.
Yep.
So let me ask you this, okay? And you got the designers on the phone, okay, with us, all right? Even the ones in Bozeman, Montana today, okay? All right. So if you had your druthers, if you look at your school and you look at the needs of the kids now, what would come to your mind that would be the cool thing you would want to have next? And maybe I know that is that you don't have to make a phone call from the health room. But besides that.
So that nature room that Ellen was talking about, I think our kids would love spaces where students can kind of buddy up with another student and have conversations, either just regular conversation or restorative conversations if there's been conflict, spaces that feel comfortable, homey, not so sterile would be awesome. I know our staff right now is, you know, they're all hanging in there and we're leaning on each other. But spaces where teachers would be able to, you know, have a quiet moment either with another colleague or be able to take a phone call, you know, those types of spaces would be amazing. We have a lot of natural light in our middle school, but our high school, it would be fantastic if we could, even if we can't bring nature in, to be able to have an eye out would be amazing.
Your needs have been registered on air. And I want to ask Mike this, okay? Mike, you know, we always talk about flexible furniture for the students, for their learning, you know, everybody knows what that is, you know, where you can change things around quickly. How important is that for adults, all right, for faculty? If they have, have a room where they can flex the furniture around and get comfortable or business-like or whatever, how important is that?
I think it's incredibly important. The reason being is that if as you transition to this model of instruction, and maybe not even transition, as you've been thrust into a model of instruction where
yeah.
you're constantly doing something different at every given moment, you think about all the things that a professional does during the course of the day. One piece of furniture, one chair, one work height is not likely going to be the right thing to make sure that the person is well, so that
right.
they can move, that they can get that blood flowing. They can just by standing and working, mm-hmm. you'll increase the ability to focus and retain if you kind of change or retain information as you're changing your position. So if we think about all the things that a teacher does, sometimes they're teaching, sometimes they're working with their partners, sometimes they're grading papers, sometimes they're reviewing worksheets, sometimes they're taking care of personal needs of individual students or communicating with a family member.
And if I might add, sometimes they're just thinking. Yeah, sometimes they're just thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, or just decompressing. Yep. So,
yeah.
So if those are all of the habits and dispositions and mindsets that our teachers are in, then we want to create the conditions to support every one of those different things that a teacher needs throughout the day so that they can do their absolute best work and find the environment where they are going to be most comfortable doing that work. And so I think the big takeaway here is our teachers are still learners, right? The school is not, it is all about the kids, but it's all about learners. Mm-hmm. And our educators are learners too. They're learning every single day. So we need to create the conditions where all learners can thrive in these buildings. And so by ignoring the teachers, we're ignoring a very critical part of what a school is. A school is not a building. A school is much more complex than that.
And I think it was Ellen who said it before, right now, 48%, I read this, the NEA says 48% of educators are thinking of leaving their job, okay, while the cohorts at the education schools are dropping, okay? So we have to take good care of our educators and mm-hmm. stop that 48% from thinking it's time to make a change, all right? And one of the ways to do that is thoughtful SEL design and implementation, okay, for staff. And I hate to use the good political term, but it's like trickle-down SEL. A happy staff, a well-balanced staff is going to make mm-hmm. for a well-balanced school, okay? Trickle-down economics doesn't work, I don't think, but trickle-down SEL, I think, does, all right? You know, it's just, you guys are so smart on this. I love talking to you, you folks from Fielding International. Kim, this is great to know you. I love what you guys are doing out there. I never heard of this before. I think it's great.
Come visit.
I would love to. And by the way, where's the tulip exhibit? I know you got to have a tulip exhibit in Grand Rapids somewhere, right?
That might be in Holland. I'm not
okay.
Sure.
Well, that's close enough.
Yeah.
That's close enough. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great stuff. That's a great part of the world. I've never been to Western Michigan. That's a beautiful part of the world, I got to tell you. It's just great. I used to live in Chicago and go there quite a bit, okay? It's just a great part of the world. So, Kim, thank you very much for being here. Keep up the good work.
Thank
I'm
you,
very
Larry.
Impressed. Oh, my pleasure. Ellen and Mike, you guys are terrific. Enjoy Ferndale. Am I correct? Ferndale?
Yes, Ferndale.
Okay, and Mike, enjoy Bozeman. All right?
I will. You know, it's a negative. It was negative 24 degrees this morning, so that's the type of enjoyment I'll have in Bozeman.
-24. Okay, so it's summer. It's already summer there in Bozeman.
That's right, summer already.
I must tell you guys this. I live in Maine. Yesterday we hit almost 75 degrees. Okay, and tomorrow we're going to get 8 to 12 inches of snow. I always tell people, I do love the change of seasons in Maine. But not all in one day, okay? So
You know what, Larry?
It's nuts.
I mean, that's a great metaphor for what we need to be thinking about with kids in schools. One day it's 74, and tomorrow it's snowing 12 inches, and we need to make sure our schools support the full range.
Right. Absolutely. Mike, well said. All right, and enjoy that mind. What's the temperature right now? What is it? It's 9:10 there. What's the temperature?
Zero. 0 degrees.
Zero. So let's go out, put the shorts on, and enjoy the beach.
I will.
Okay. Be good, guys. Take care. Thank you all. Stay safe, okay?
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, my good friends from Fielding International. Boy, do they know how to design a school. All right. do a lot of work with them. They're just great. And that's fieldingintl.com. But I got to tell you, on their website, they have a design page. Okay, this has 75 illustrations of school designs. That's just absolutely incredible. Check it all out. It's at Fielding International, I-N-T-L, Fielding. You can Google it, Fielding International. Okay, it's good stuff. And Kim over at the Grand Rapids Public Museum School, which is, from what I heard of, I remember 6 through 12. Unbelievable. Two buildings. Well, just great. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org, and also check out what we do at seltoday.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for listening.